Welcome to Churches Planting Churches, a podcast on the theology and practice of church planting. I'm your host, Tony Morita. Preaching is obviously important in church planting. As people gather around the Word, we have the opportunity to evangelize outsiders and edify the saints. We also have the opportunity to cast vision, communicate who we are as a church, and to set a sense of culture among our faith community. This task is not easy, especially in our day. Biblical cluelessness abounds, skepticism permeates many of our contexts, gospel clarity is often lacking, and the human problems of despair, anxiety, fear, apathy are always issues to consider. And of course, idolatry tempts every human heart we address, including our own. How can we preach in a way that is clear and bold, gracious and gospel-driven, Christ-exalting and community-building, mercy-minded and missions-mobilizing? How do we preach sermons that truly move people? On today's podcast, we will talk about this very thing with Yancey Arrington. Yancey is a teaching pastor at Clear Creek Community Church in League City, Texas, and the author of a new preaching book entitled Preaching That Moves People: How to Get Down the Mountain of Your Messages with Maximum Impact. Yancey, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Tony, great to be here and looking forward to talking with you today.
Yeah, man. So, Yancey and I think we met at an Acts 29 fundraiser several years ago. And we've since crossed paths various times. We've talked about preaching together a good bit. As I mentioned in the intro, Yancey has a new book on preaching, which is fantastic. And I want to talk a lot about preaching. So before we do that, though, just a little bit of context for those who don't know you. How did you come to know Jesus? A bit about your family, your church setting there.
Sure. I grew up in the Texas Panhandle in a small town called Plainview, Texas, and grew up with a dad and a mom and two younger brothers. And so I became a follower of Jesus when I was 10 years old and was pretty involved with church as a young adult, young child, into my teenage years, probably my junior year, decided to get real serious about what that looked like. Went to Baylor University and was going as a pre-dental political science major, but really felt God tugging at my heart to go into a vocational ministry. And within the first semester, I was all in. So switched majors a couple of semesters later to religion, went on to get my master's at Southwestern Seminary in Fort Worth. It was there where I met my wife Jennifer. Jennifer and I have been married 22 years this June 1st. We have three boys. So I've got a high schooler, a junior higher, and a grade schooler. So we're trying to cover the spread. And so while I was at Southwestern, I served at a church called Lake Point Church there, which is now in Rockwall, Texas. Was there for 5 years. Was processing the idea of actually planting a church and thinking through all that. And I got this call from a guy named Bruce Wesley, a guy from Houston. And he had just planted a church 4 years earlier and was looking to add this role of teaching pastor. And what excited me about that was not only the fact that I was going to really focus on preaching as far as the role, but I was going to be at the ground floor of a church that had just essentially started. So it kind of scratched my church planning itch as well, Tony. And so that's where I've stayed. I've been there for the June 1st also. It's not just my wedding anniversary, it's my church anniversary. I will have been at Clear Creek 20 years this June the 1st. So for those who may not know, Clear Creek Community Church is a multi-campus church in the Bay Area of Houston. It's an Acts 29 church. We have around 5,000 or so people that attend on a weekend service, just to give people some context. I think the only thing I could add to that is about 4 years, 5 years ago, I got a doctorate from Covenant Seminary there in St. Louis. And so that's kind of my little background there.
Excellent, man. So the church is about 25 years old then.
Yes. Yeah, actually, this October 31st, which people think about as Halloween, we call that Reformation Day. That's when we started. It'll be 25 years this October 31st.
Now, you and Bruce, do you guys share the pulpit? Have you had kind of a team preaching model through the years? Do you do the majority of that? How's that work?
Yeah, it's a great question. When we first started, actually, we were more of a Willow Creek model church, and that's a whole story and podcast in and of itself for how we transitioned to where we are today. But I initially did the midweek service, which we considered primarily our worship service. I was doing verse by verse through books of the Bible. Bruce was doing more topical stuff on the weekends. And so just as God led us and discipled us as pastors and what we wanted to do at our church, about a decade ago, we shifted philosophies and merged everything into one service, felt like the gospel would reach the saved and the unsaved. And from that point on, Bruce and I share the pulpit almost 50-50. We're the primary pulpit pastors. We do have other guys in the mix as well. We'll put in campus pastors that'll speak several times a year. We have another guy that kind of is... will spell us when Bruce and I need a break. But generally speaking, we rotate every other week, and it's been fun. It's challenging. It's challenging in that in the past, I would develop a sermon series, like we're going to go through Romans. I'd mark it all up. I'd be ready to make like the themes that I wanted to have and kind of own it all. But now I don't do that. I share that with the team, and that's been good. There's pros and cons to it, but the pros, I think they far outweigh the cons.
Yeah. So how many services do you have on a Sunday, including, you mentioned campuses?
Yeah, well, in our original campus, we have three, and every one of our other campuses, we have two. And so we currently have four campuses. We also have a Wednesday night service, which is kind of a hybrid campus. They do the same service that you would see on a Sunday. So, four and a half or five. But I'm usually preaching three services a weekend. And on the other weekends that I'm not preaching at our original campus, I will be at one of those other campuses preaching that same sermon just a week later. We also use video as well. So we're a hybrid in a lot of things, not the least of which is a mix of live and video teaching.
Talk about the benefits of not preaching weekly. I know you mentioned some of the challenges, but what are some of the advantages of not having the week after week after week after week grind?
Yeah, well, I think that I get twice. Let me rephrase it. It feels like I get 10 times more stuff done on the weeks I don't have to preach. I mean, I don't know anyone whose role is just to preach. If you've got that job, keep it. Don't ever get rid of it. You're a unicorn. But for me, I have all kinds of other roles at the church outside of the pulpit ministry. And so I have a lot of leadership responsibilities. And so the weeks I don't preach are weeks where I get all that mental space freed up to accomplish the other things I need to do. Plus, it just gives me a sense of rest. You know, what I tell people, Tony, and I'm a big advocate for team preaching because that's what we do, and I think I've seen the benefits of that. 10 years we've done it. It's just been one guy. I used to do like 48 weeks a year, and now I probably do 22 as far as original sermons. What I would tell people is when I look back at multiple team teaching, I think a couple of things. Number one, it keeps you from being the church dependent upon one personality. I mean, there are churches I believe that would all but close up shop if their pastor got hit by a meteorite that Sunday morning. And I just think it's incredibly healthy to have a church not dependent upon one personality. I think also it allows your church to appreciate different styles. I mean, if Tony and I were on the teaching team, I might be a fork, he might be a knife, another guy might be a spoon. I mean, there's just different ways that we're going to get fed. And what I want to do is duplicate the task, not the style. And so it allows our church to learn from different styles. I love that. It gives pastors, as I've alluded to, time to actually lead. And I would argue, lastly, that it extends the endurance factor. I mean, every preacher has a magic number of weeks that he preaches until he's just good for nothing and he's running on fumes. And so I used to think it was about, for me, 8 to 10 weeks. I could do 10 weeks in a row. And just then I needed a break. Now I don't even have to worry about that because I'm in a rotation where I'm doing it every other weekend roughly. And it's amazing how much it's extended that number. I mean, it's exponential. I never really feel that tired, at least as my own self-awareness. I'm sure that I am. But man, it just feels like I can go, you know, if you think about semesters, I can go almost a whole semester and never take a real super big break because I'm getting little ones over the time. So it's probably a long-winded answer to your question, but I really do think it's the pros for team teaching, having multiple preachers as has been fantastic. I know that the con, you know, people want to point to Corinthians. We're talking about Apollos and Paul, but you know, that they may have favorites, but that's going to happen no matter what. If you're a solo teacher, you've already said, I'm going to be your favorite. And so Paul doesn't get rid of the idea of multiple preachers just because people might take favorites. He addresses the heart issue, but he doesn't go, well, we ought to scrap the whole thing. So it's been healthy for us, I'll say that.
Excellent, man. I agree with everything you just said, and I actually want to do more of that myself, and I'm sure other guys out there would as well. Some of them don't have another guy that can carry the pulpit. They may be, you know, a young church planter, a newly established church. What kind of counsel would you give these guys?
Man, I hear that. What I would say is, if you're going to disciple people, if a disciple is a disciple-making disciple, then a pastor needs to be a pastor-making pastor. And so I just think there's always somebody that you can have under your wing that you can carry, and they can be lay people. I mean, I just find a guy that meets the qualifications of an elder and that of a teaching elder. You don't even have to make him that, although, I mean, I'd argue you might want to put him on some kind of track in the future. But I'm a big believer in having just, you're looking for giftedness, not for titles. And so I'd find some guys, they don't have to necessarily be young, but people that you know have the gift of teaching, and you're just going to have to spend time with them and put them under your wing and develop them and then give them, you know, to use a baseball analogy, you just got to give them some innings. You got to give them some times on the mound. And so I think you can be judicious about that. Every pastor has certain weekends they know where maybe attendance is going to be low, whether that's spring break or, you know, Labor Day weekend, and those might be times where you're not sacrificing the church for the guy to preach, but you're just being wise about, hey, this is probably a Sunday that I've trained you, I've let you practice, I've given you some lesser mounds, it's, you know, some AAA and AA, forgive the term here, to speak and preach, and I want to give you at least one shot and evaluate you and train you up. I mean, that's what at Clear Creek, we're big believers in that. So that's why I think I just don't think there's an excuse for the guy who's a solo pastor going, oh my gosh, I just can't find anybody. It's hard for me to believe that that's true. It may take more work, but I think you can.
Yeah, and your baseball analogies are really warming my heart. Now for the guys across the pond, like Steve Timmis, they won't understand AAA and AA, but we're here to educate the world, really, in God's favorite sport. That's kind of a sub agenda on the podcast. So I appreciate that.
Oh no, people can't see this, but I am actually wearing my Houston Astros shirt today, and I do that probably for people like Timmis who understand stuff like Manchester United and English Premier League football. But you know, you gotta accommodate, just like any good preacher. You gotta come down to where the people are. So sometimes we'll just come down to where Timmis is, and so he can understand the world's greatest pastime, not just America's.
Right, right, right. We love the weaker brothers as well as the stronger brothers.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I know an email's coming now.
Hey, so I didn't know you guys had a Willow Creek, little Willow Creek history there. Talk about how you've seen preaching change, not necessarily with Willow Creek in mind, but if you want to include that, that's fine. But you've been at it now for a while. The church is 25 years old. You've seen a lot of trends, even probably within A29, and you're there in Texas. What would be some of the things that you would point to and say, man, this has changed over the last 25 years?
You know, so I think of that in certain kind of pockets. I'd say stylistically, I think, I mean this, let me caveat this and preface this so I'm not misunderstood. I'm going to refer to churches that are in predominantly Anglo cultures, so I don't want to be misunderstood here. But I think with that being said, I believe the era of the orator has, the order has come and gone. There was, when I was young, there was a style that's still probably around, it's still around in more traditional Southern settings, and that's my background. I grew up in Texas, and you know, I was exposed to, if you think about the great preachers of the South, And I don't even want to name them because if I do, it may sound like I'm being critical and I'm not. But at least the guys I heard early on in my life, I mean, they were orators as much as they were preachers. Words were more flowery, phrases, pauses, tones had a lilt to them. They would come across as more dramatic. But 25 years later, I rarely, if ever, see that style, especially in younger generations, because I think to younger generations, right or wrong, that kind of delivery comes across as fake, comes across as less authentic. It seems to me that today's preaching is more reflective of someone's true personality outside of the pulpit. Like, however you are, like with regular people, that's how you ought to be in the pulpit. And that wasn't always the case. I mean, it really was about oratory, intonation, pitch, variance, a little bit of drama in there. And I don't think that was meant to manipulate, but for younger generations, and frankly, for myself, it just feels a little more inauthentic. So that's a change. I think strategically, preaching's changed because you have the birth of the video venue. It's a relatively new phenomenon. I know there's strong opinions on both sides, and I appreciate them. I mean, we do it. Clear Creek does it. I think it brings some unique benefits and challenges to the preacher. I mean, if I could just say, like, a challenge for video venue is that there are times when I'm preaching and I want to say something specific because this specific campus has done something. I have to not say that, because I know that my video is going to go to 3 to 4 other campuses. The pro, at least one pro for me, is I get to choose which sermon every campus gets, and they're going to get my best one. You know, the one where I didn't flub my lines and say Noah was really Adam and forget what Revelation is. And so they get the best of me. And then finally, I would say, content-wise, and this is where I'm super encouraged, content-wise, Tony, for me, at least in the circles that I run in, I'm seeing a growing number of preachers, especially younger preachers, desire to preach sermons from a more gospel-centric approach. I think maybe this was started with my generation. I don't know. I'm 46. I'll be 47 this April. I'm definitely right in the middle of Generation X. I think we're the smallest generation. I'd like to say we're the smallest, but we made the biggest impact. That's just me trying to talk myself up, but exactly, man. It's actually interesting, as a side note, if you look at some of the preachers that have the most notoriety today, they were born in the same era that we were. The problem is they have done just as much damage, some of them, as they've done good things. So we're just catalytic, right or wrong. But here's what I've noticed. I think much of the modern day preaching that you see from what many would call celebrity preachers from the 1980s to the 1990s to the 2000s to the 2010s are really boiled down just self-help messages that they could hear, that anyone could hear from any TV talk show. I mean, the Bible just becomes a book of virtues. Frankly, I know this sounds harsh, but they're really Christ-less sermons. If Jesus is there, he's a tag along, he's a footnote, he's the walk down the aisle Jesus. And at some point, I think for my generation and younger guys, and maybe older guys, preaching that way has such a tiny gas tank that it just doesn't last long. I mean, it felt vapid to me. I just wanted to preach like Paul when he says, I just want to preach Christ and him crucified. And so if anything, I've seen a revival in Christ-centered preaching. I know I've been a huge proponent of it, and I appreciate guys like yourself, Tony. I mean, gosh, your book, Christ-Centered Expositor, and their other books of the like. I mean, that may be one of the most encouraging things I've seen in the church, is just the, and maybe, you know, there's a lot of traditions in the church I've appreciated, and I even come from some of them, but a lot of the preaching I see today that fills the pews is not the kind of preaching I was satisfied with. I wanted Jesus start front and center, and I think there's a movement of guys who not only want it, but like movement of guys, of men and women, who like yourself, like Tim Keller, like Brian Chappell, a lot of the guys with the Gospel Coalition that really want to raise the banner of this is what preaching should look like. We're not going to argue about styles. We are going to argue about substance, and Jesus ought to be the sum and substance of it all. And man, that won my heart years ago, and that's a mountain I'm going to die on. But that's a change I've seen that I am incredibly grateful for. Mm.
Amen. Amen to all of that. You mentioned a couple of books there, so go ahead and mention what you recommend to guys, and I want to talk about your book, and I know you guys do a lot of leadership development yourself, so maybe feel free to throw some of that in as well.
Well, first and foremost for me, everyone's got their favorite books. I've read a lot of those favorites. I've read the Martin Lloyd-Jones Preaching and Preachers, where everything's an abomination. You know, did you cough? That's an abomination. Did you use a cross reference? That's an abomination. I'm knocking it, but I think it's one of the best books out there because it's, if anything, Lloyd-Jones is confident of what he's talking about. And I don't think we ought to give him a hard time. I know he's not with us anymore. He's a legend. I stand upon his shoulders. But I think that book's awesome. And I just had to say that because I know someone's going to just nod their head like, you know, whatever with the abomination stuff. So sorry, that's an inside joke for those who've read it. For me, first and foremost, Brian Chappell's Christ-Centered Preaching is my all-time go-to book for trying to help guys accomplish what I want them to accomplish with Christ-Centered Preaching. I had the privilege to sit under Brian's teaching for a few days when I was in my doctoral studies at Covenant. And I was at seminary for my doctorate to learn more about gospel centrality and everything. I mean, I was writing a book on my own at my own time off of John Owen's sanctification stuff. I wanted to hear from Brian about his preaching, and the reason I like his book, among many things, is it's the most approachable process, I think, that you can put on any passage to help you get to the Jesus in the text and not make it some kind of, you know, origami where you've just crumpled up some pages and look, I came up with Jesus. So Brian's stuff is gold. I love it. I've asked permission to use his stuff when I try to train guys, and he's been so gracious. So I love his stuff. And I would just add to it. I know you're not asking for this and you're not trying to ask me to plug anything, but I really do appreciate your book, Tony, Christ-Centered Expositor. I think it's right on. In fact, it's so comprehensive about how to get to Jesus in a God-honoring way, and you're not manipulating or making stuff that's not there. I think Christ-Centered Expositor is a go-to. Let me give you just a couple of books that I don't think people think about for a lot of reasons. Maybe one, the first one's a little too dense, I think, for many, and the other is probably because he's not from our tradition, but I'm going to throw these out there. For me, it's Cindy Gradonis. His stuff on the Old Testament is just flat out gold. Some might argue, again, he's harder to read, but sometimes there are certain diamonds you just got to dig deeper to get. And one of my favorite books is The Modern Preacher and the Ancient Text. And I'll tell you why. With all these books, it's not like I love every bit of those books or every page in it, although I probably like most, if not all of it. I love these books because there's sections of them that speak to me. And Gradonis's stuff on how you really preach the Old Testament and how you hit a text without moralizing everything or making everything, you've put yourself in every position of, you know, I'm David, I'm Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, I'm the woman at the well, which is what I always heard and probably how I preached. He just does a wonderful job saying, you know, there's probably a better way. So for those who've never heard of Gradonis, go get him. So here's my wild card, and I'm going to risk saying this one. And I can give you a lot more lists or a lot more books. I'm going to say Frederick Buechner's Telling the Truth, the Gospel is Tragedy, Comedy, and Fairy Tale. And here's why I say this. So before y'all start to write me emails, by the way, if you're angry at this and you want to talk to me, my email address is tony@thegospelcoalition.org. But so Buechner, what I appreciate is I don't come from his tradition. I probably wouldn't even agree with some of the guys that he celebrates, like, you know, Hopkins and other guys that he mentions. But I think there's something for pastors who like to learn to read from guys outside their tradition. And Buechner's work is really about the art of preaching. It's about the vibe, the feel, the heart, the story of preaching, and not just the science of it. And it's a book that when I read it at the recommendation of a friend, it's a book I more felt than I just broke down. And it stretched me in a good way. Like, yo, man, there's got to be a little bit of romance is not the right word, but there's got to be something more than just X's and O's when you preach. And I felt like Buechner, who really embraces the art of narrative preaching, I'm not good at that. And I think I tried it once. People didn't even know who I was. But those kind of things really stretch me. And you know, there's lists upon lists about really good books. That's my wild card. It's probably more than you wanted to know, but those are the kind of books that have, at least portions of those books have struck me in ways that have left indelible marks on me and my preaching. Mm,
excellent. Now, well, you wrote Preaching That Moves People, which is a very unique structure for those who haven't picked up the book. Four sections, arrange for tension, build for speed, chart for bandwidth, and then find your voice. And then you have chapters under those headings. Can you talk a little bit about why you wrote the book and then maybe hit some highlights in the book?
Yeah, sure. Probably two reasons that come to mind about why I wrote the book. The first reason is the clearest in that Bruce Wesley, our senior pastor, a guy I've worked with for, yeah, as you guys now know, 20 years, he encouraged me to write it. God wired my brain, apparently, to think somewhat differently about sermon composition, sermon writing, and maybe even sermon preaching. And the way I did it, apparently, really impacted not just Bruce and his preaching, but the way our team started to think about preaching. And so years ago, I started a preaching cohort, got our guys, put them together, tried to help them preach better. And I would talk to them about how I thought about preaching. And Bruce said, well, tell me how you think about preaching. And I was like, I don't know how I think about preaching. I just preach. And he said, well, you think about it and see if you can translate that for our cohort. And so because of that, I started to try to think of metaphors and ways. And for those who get the book, you'll see things like going down the mountain and emotional center and pace and all these things. Those were just my ways to try to get guys to learn how I think about preaching in a way that they could feel the text and not just work through a text. So the book was fashioned in the crucible of a real-time ministry to other preachers. And secondly, the reason I wrote this book, and I want to be very careful how I say this. Again, you guys know the email to write if you're upset. And I want to caveat this, preface this by saying I hold seminary in high regard. I've got 2 degrees from seminary. But I wanted to write a book about a subject that I never heard really substantially in seminary. I heard about how you put a sermon together and I had to deliver it in front of a class. But really, I would argue that from a seminary perspective, sermon prep and delivery is relatively an intellectual process. You have points, you got subpoints, you got a poem, but there's so much more into that. And I believe seminary professors believe that as well. They only have so much time, so many classes that they can teach and get it in. I get it. But I wanted to help people feel through their sermons, not just think through them. So when they preached, people would be carried along with them in the message. But I never got that training. And here's what's funny. In countless conversations I've had when people have attended my workshops or read my book, they say the exact same thing. Man, I got trained. I never heard any of this stuff, but I sure wish I had heard it before. And it struck a note with me because I remember Tim Keller, I don't know if I was at this or I heard this, might have been both, I don't remember, but I do remember Tim Keller one time saying to the effect that there aren't any books on preaching that address the emotional or heart side of the preaching event. And I was thinking to myself, well, mine may not be the best by any stretch of the imagination, but it will be a book that will do that. And so so that's what I tried to do. As you addressed it, I've got kind of 4 sections in there. The first 3 are really areas that address the sermon itself. The last one is the sermonizer. And so let me just kind of skip over this really quickly. It's the ABCs and the F. It's basically, I think sermons should arrange for tension. And so what I tell people is tension equals attention. The more tension you have, the greater attention you'll get. The way that I think people learn preaching is antithetical to the kind of preaching I think they should do. I know that sounds controversial, but maybe if you're a novice and don't know what you're doing, sure, you ought to go by the maxim that I was taught. Tell them what you're going to tell them, then tell them what you told them. But I'll tell you, I don't know how to preach a more boring sermon than to follow that advice, because all you've done is taken the mystery and the tension out of it. I mean, if I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, why do I need to tell you what I'm about to tell you? Because I've already told you. And so there's no, who wants to lean in on that? I mean, there's nothing in the world that does that, but somehow sermons do that and lectures do that. And I did not want to preach a lecture. I wanted to preach a sermon. So again, tony@clearcreek.org. The second thing is build for speed. That's the B. Every sermon has a pace. The key to preaching effectively is you need to know what kind of sermon you have and what kind of pace it should have, because they all have different paces. Most sermons aren't too fast, although there are people that preach those. Most of them are too slow. people get in love with their content, and it just ruins it. Thirdly, chart for bandwidth. I want to give preachers tools for examining the emotional flow of their sermons. Again, that's what I want to focus on. Other guys can teach you how to break down a passage as far as its intro, its body, its conclusion. I want to help you see the emotional center of that passage or that message. And if you don't have one, you don't have a sermon. So it's something we practice at Clear Creek. We actually chart the bandwidth emotionally of our messages. And let me just say this, and it's in the introduction of my book. If you don't have good homiletical skills, if you need to be trained in that, don't buy my book. My book's not for that. I mean, go get Tony's Christ Center Expositor, get Brian Chappell stuff, get Craddock's Preaching. I mean, there's a whole long list of books you ought to get before you get mine. I actually say that and give the list in my book. My book's for guys that need to learn the next step of that, which is, now that I know the pieces, how do I put it together as art, if you will? So I'm done with this one. Lastly is finding your voice. I'm shifting to from the sermon to the sermonizer. All I try to do in that is give practical ways that guys can identify what kind of preacher they are. I talk about the different personalities. I talk about ways to learn to discern your and piece out your voice from the other voices that you've heard, because I'm convinced instead of guys being a poor version of somebody else, they can leverage who God made them to be in the pulpit. So put all that together, and I think you start to learn how to better preach in a way that moves people.
Man, I love it. I love the book for many reasons, and one is, I mean, you hit on it. It's you're filling a gap within the field of preaching in terms of books to read. And we've always, to me, also had a weakness in books that help guys on delivery, sermon delivery. So this is not purely a delivery book, but it is one I'm going to use in courses and workshops. And so I've already included it in a couple of syllabi that I've developed. So I'm grateful for it, man. What about last piece here, your personal prep process? What does that look like when you're preaching?
Well, my personal prep process, this is where I frustrate a lot of guys, because frankly, it's a little different every time I do it. For me, the preaching process and the sermon prep is an organic deal. I more have to feel it than think through it, though I do both. So here's roughly what that looks like. I take Monday, sometimes Sunday night after I've preached and I have a sermon that next Sunday I've got to put together. I start to think through it. I think through the text. I print off a copy of just the text. One side of it's the text, the other side of it's blank, and I just work the text. I don't look at any commentaries. I don't look at any kind of supplemental material. It's just me, the text, and hopefully the work of the Spirit in the mind of the interpreter. So I'm breaking it down. I'm looking for the main idea of both the text and not just the text. As I look at this, I'm thinking, okay, what's the main idea? The main idea of the text is not necessarily the main idea of the sermon, because it would be worded differently. I'm not looking for an exegetical phrase. I'm looking for a homiletical phrase that helps me to get, if you will, my way down the mountain, which is how I talk about writing a sermon. Then once I have that idea, what I'll do is I'll pitch it. I'll give it a 5-minute thumbnail sketch. I'll say it to a staff member or a friend or maybe my wife. Hey, Jennifer, here's what I'm thinking. What do you think about this? And then once I'm able to pitch it, I'll start to write it out. I tell guys, if you can't pitch me your sermon in 5 minutes, you don't have a sermon to write yet. You just have a bunch of ideas. And so I'll start to write it out. So I'll finish my notes. I'll start on a Tuesday, and I'll finish by Wednesday. And I know for some guys, that they're like, whoa, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. You know, you don't write your sermons until Saturday night. No, I don't, because and I write in the book why I don't do that, and y'all can read why. I've drawn a line earlier in my week, and I think it's beneficial for me. So I'll write it. I'll actually write out a manuscript. Never used to do that. That wasn't even my style. I'm an extemporaneous preacher, but I see the value in it. So I write out a complete manuscript. And then I'll read through that manuscript. So I'll pitch it, I'll write it, I'll read it. I think it's the most beneficial thing I do is to read out loud my manuscript, because preaching is an oral medium. And some things look good on paper, but they sound horribly when you get it out of your mouth. And so I'll take that, I'll take a red pen, I'll edit it up. That's probably one of the greatest things that guys miss, is they don't edit their messages. Editing is, someone told me great writing is not about great writing, it's about great editing. And I think sermons can be like that as well. Editing is it's the secret sauce for at least what you bring to the table. So I read it, I talk it, and then I preach it. What I say about preaching it is because I have multiple services. And for anyone from Clear Creek listening to this, I hope you don't get the idea that when I do my first sermon in the first service, like it's a trial run. It's not. But it really does give me a good gauge of what works, what doesn't work, where the dynamics in the message, where did I sit down in a part of this message where, oh man, that felt like I had traction with the people. And so my sermons change from service to service, not dramatically, but I'm always, you know, they say your sermon's never done. Well, for me, that's kind of what it is. So for me, Tony, it's pitch it, write it, read it, talk it, preach it. That's how I do that. That's my prep process, generally speaking. So,
man, I love it, Yancey. I love how you've just immersed yourself in kind of the foundational literature that many of us have, immersed ourselves in. But you have synthesized that, and you understand yourself, you understand your context, and you've written a book that conveys your own the personal strengths and gifts and abilities. And then just the way you talk about preaching is it's not cookie cutter. You've built on the foundation, but you've really customized it. And I think it's a great lesson in itself. So thank you so much, man. How can the guys keep up with you, hear your sermons? Maybe even if you have preaching lectures, some of this stuff available, where could they go for some resources?
Well, I'd say first and foremost, if anything of what you've heard me say about preaching that moves people is something that you want to learn more about, I would just go online and in Amazon, grab my book. It's Preaching That Moves People. It's pretty clear, how to get there and what to do there. But as far as following me, clearcreek.org is our church website. You can watch, listen to any of my messages. Just click the, just like any other or most church websites, just click watch and you can see where I'm at, what I'm doing. That's just one way to do it. My blog is yanceyarrington.com. I'm not as faithful as some of those other guys. I tell people I'm not a blogger. I'm a pastor. I got a lot of other hats that I wear, and I write when I can, but I'm not driven by that. I got a church to shepherd, and for me, I don't have a whole lot of bandwidth to write on it, although I do, and there's a lot of my preaching resources on there. On Twitter, you can hit me up at Yancey Arrington. Just make sure it's the Yancey with the E in it, Yancey, Arrington, and my Instagram's the same, Yancey Arrington. So, man, I appreciate guys that want to follow me. I don't have a lot of wisdom, but what I tell people is I may not fill up your cup, but I'm going to empty mine as far as it's concerned, trying to help people grow in being better preachers, lovers of the gospel, and on mission to plant churches. Mm. So,
amen. You always encourage me, brother, and you always teach me. I have several anecdotes here that you've mentioned that I find very useful, man. So thanks for being on the show.
Tony, it's been a pleasure, man. God bless you guys, and God bless Acts 29 and the Gospel Coalition.